either just prosper like anything in this life and attain the heavenly planets, or if you keep going in that, then you strive for liberation, moksha. But in each of those cases, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, if following that type of dharma, nothing wrong with dharma, it's Vedic. What's wrong with it? It's Vedic. But it's the same reason that Vyasadeva was not satisfied. After compiling all of the Vedas, he was feeling not satisfied. What to speak of someone who's trying to follow the Vedas? And even doing so perfectly, you'll not be satisfied. As was Vyasa not satisfied. And what's that dissatisfaction or pinch? It's the result of Kaitava Dharma, that which takes away Paradharma. So what's Paradharma? We spoke about that. It was the Pancha, the fifth goal. So the verse that was speaking about Dharma, that's one of the things it was speaking about, but as an alternative to those four, the verse I want to speak about today does also. It just clarifies, or let's say expands on that point. Dharma projita kaita vodra paramo nirmat saranam satam. What else did the verse speak about?
Hearing the Bhagavatam
is very important. Why? You know the answer, I just scared you, intimidated you by asking you why. You're the one that always asks the why question. You know why. Yeah. What happens when you hear the cream of the Vedas? She's giving you the answer. Vidhunoti suritsatam. One's heart becomes cleansed. Thank you, Shreya. What else did we speak about? Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite. What does that mean? Mahamuni Krite. Mahamuni Vyas is the author. Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite. And what's the subject? Kimba Prayer Ishwaraha.
Who needs another literature?
Krichavi Shushuri Tachanat. This is, it gives you the full realization of the absolute truth. Who needs anything else? It's one-stop shopping. Just go to Srimad Bhagavatam. Everything is there. And then this morning we heard a verse from the third canto, very nice verse, where Kapila Deva is speaking to Devahuti about the glories of devotional service. Jnana Vairagya Yuktena. Bhakti Yogena. Yoginaha. That verse?
Bhakti Yogena Yoginaha. Shemaya Padma. Parishanti Kutobanya.
So, in that verse, Kapila Deva is saying same thing that's said here in the first canto. chapter 2, Bhagavatam, that one who engages in devotional service, part of the why do we hear this Srimad Bhagavatam, just by hearing this Srimad Bhagavatam, it ignites or it awakens the dormant knowledge and attraction for Krishna. And when that dormant knowledge of Krishna awakens, then detachment from Kaitava Dharma again is these material motivations for engaging in religion. I'll share it with you this way. It'll make me really express it. Once when I was visiting in Houston, the venue was right near the NASA Center. It's near Crystal Lake, but one of the suburbs in the southern part of southwest Houston. And so I was told the people that are here they're either PhDs because there's a university, because I think the wife was a PhD professor at the nearby university, the husband was a scientist at the NASA Center. And that's their circle of friends. So, pious, well-educated, with their piety, you know, high, good birth, good education, Janma Aishwarya Shutra Sri Bir. They had it all. So I didn't know any of them. It was just like, you know, room filled with scientists and PhDs. Maybe there's an engineer or token, an engineer or two in the group. So I said, I'm going to place a question before you. Please let me finish the question before you respond. And that the question is, how many of you would agree with the following statement? The purpose of the Vedas is to live your life in such a way you're living in the quality of goodness. And because you're living in that quality of goodness, you will in this lifetime prosper. And because you're continuing to live your life in goodness, after this life, you'll attain the heavenly planets. How many of you would agree? Before I even finish, they all had their hands up. That's the purpose of the Vedas. And then I said, what would you say if I said that's not the purpose of the Vedas? And the host was like a vocal person, like a kind of a leader amongst the group. He said, well, that's definitely the purpose of the Vedas. Everybody knows that's what the purpose of the Vedas is. Increase your piety, and the fruit of that piety is that you'll prosper. And in the prosperity, you continue to live a life of goodness, so that you continue to, in the next life, attain the heavenly planets. That's the goal. But here, what about Krishna's words? Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nishtrigunya Vavarjana. Second chapter, very early in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The Vedas deal mainly with the three modes of material nature. Rise above the three modes of material nature, O Arjuna. Be transcendental to all of them. And what about this verse in Bhagavad Gita in the 15th chapter? Krishna says, Sarvashacharam riddhi sannivishto mataksmatir gyanam apohanam cha vedaish desayavaraham eva vedyo vedanta krit veda vedeva chaham. I don't know that verse. So Krishna says, I'm situated in the heart of every living being, Sarvashacharam riddhi sannivishto, and from that being situated in everyone's heart, from him comes mataksmitir, remembrance, jnanam, knowledge, apohanam, and forgetfulness. Remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness comes from him. Being situated in the heart, he's supplying. Now then, what's the purpose of the Vedas? The Vedaish desire vire. Aham. Eva Vedyo. Eva is like certainly. The purpose of the Vedas is to know me. And to confirm, I'm the compiler of the Vedas. And I know the Vedas as they are. Like, you know, triple check me. So what would you say about that? The purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna. So what do you do in between? When you're thinking that the purpose of the Vedas is to engage in Dharma so that you can increase your punya, so that you can have your artha, so that you can have your kama, and maybe, if you continue on, strive for liberation. Maybe liberation is the goal. How many people are striving for liberation? Very few. And of those that are striving for liberation, it's the negation of, it's the, you know, like a coin has two sides, heads and tails. The tails is just the flip side of the heads, it's the same coin. Negation of that process of Dharma, Artha, and Kama is commonly what the notion of moksha is. But the Bhagavatam states this literature doesn't deal with that at all. It doesn't deal with the Dharma, Artha, Kama or the moksha. What does it deal with? Paradharma. Well, okay, what's that? It's the definition that Prabhupada consistently gave, I mean, deliberately and consistently, was Dharma dictionary definition. You look it up in the dictionary, what does it say about religion? A kind of faith in God. And so there's this religion, that religion, because you have this faith, that faith, but it's a kind of faith in God. Or something divine, a kind of faith. And you can change your religion just by changing your faith. This kind, that kind, the other kind. Now, is that what Dharma is? Just like a kind of faith? Prabhupada's statement is no. Dharma means the constitutional activity or constitutional nature of something. The Dharma of something is its constitutional nature. And then he would give examples. Like the Dharma of fire is heat and light. Wherever you find fire, there's these two things, heat and light. Or take it the other way. Wherever you find fire, excuse me, whether you find heat, there's fire. Wherever you have to find light, there's fire. So like even, you know, it's fire. Or it's you go through the whole process. It's sunlight that's then stored somewhere by some process, photosynthetic process that makes some carbon fuel, and then it makes electricity generating, and then it makes this. But it's just the light of the sun transformed. That's what electricity is. Or fire. Etc. So, the Dharma of water is liquidity. You can change the quality, temperature, it becomes solid, ice. Or change the temperature the other direction, it becomes vapor. But its normal state is water means it's liquid. It's its nature. So what's the Dharma of the living entity? It's not just the faith, the kind of faith the living entity has. That's not its essence or its constitutional. If you take away all other of the differences, would it strip away all that other, all that stuff? What's the essence of a living being? That's a dharma. And the dharma of a living entity is service. And paradharma is service to the Supreme. Paradharma. service to the Supreme, service to God. That's the dharma, or the para dharma, of the living entity. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is speaking about that. And when you engage in that, Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Gyanam Cha Yad Ahaitukam. Detachment and knowledge causelessly, Ahaituki, causelessly awaken just from the awakening of Bhakti Yoga unto Vasudeva, Krishna. So why do we hear Srimad Bhagavatam? Because it... Srinidhi? Why do we hear Srimad Bhagavatam?
Your heart becomes fun.
Yeah. You looked at the notes again. You just did... Because when we hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, our dormant tendency, the constitutional tendency of the soul, awakens. Was that constitutional tendency service to the Supreme? Just by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. And when we hear that Srimad Bhagavatam and our service to Vasudeva becomes awakened, Jnanam and Vairagya, causelessly. There's not some other cause, it's just hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. We become illumined, or enlightened, or filled with knowledge. Filled with knowledge, natural, not the other kind, the imported kind, where it's something out there and you have to learn something that's out there, you import it in here, and then you can say it back and you get an A in your exam. Not that kind. Something that's like intrinsic to the soul, that kind of knowledge. Or what I've been trying to explain at universities is how to train or educate character. You can teach a behavior, but how do you teach character? You can teach someone to say please and thank you, but how do you teach them to feel gratitude? They haven't figured it out. Educators don't know, and they've told me they don't know. Or to feel compassion, they don't know. They can teach a behavior, but they don't know how to teach or educate or awaken a quality, because it comes from another process. The soul awakening. To some degree it comes from the modes of... It can come from the modes of nature. Swabhava. You know what swabhava means? You know what swabhava means? One's nature. Swap means one's own. And bhava, you know. Bhava is emotion or feeling or nature. Swabhava, one's own nature. There's a conditioned sense of what is one's own nature. Like somebody might say, I know what my nature is my nature is when somebody lies, I just get really angry. I just want to smash them. It's my nature. Or someone else might say, my nature is when somebody does something that hurts another person, I feel really bad for both parties. Because the person that got hurt, but the person that's doing the hurt, they're going to have to suffer. So, you know, this nature, that nature, it's born of the modes of material nature. Swabhava. Brahma karma swabhavajam, kshatriya karma swabhavajam, etc. Vaishya karma swabhavajam, shudra karma swabhavajam. Swabhava is by the mode of nature with which we associate, there are certain behaviors. Behavior is like springs from swabhava. the behavior of a brahmana is to be clean, to be truthful, to be honest, to be compassionate, to be simple, to like austerity, to be regulated, to search for the truth, comes from some quality. And the quality is induced by the modes of nature. When the prominent mode is the mode of goodness, is the brahmana's swabhava, and from that comes certain behaviors. Or kshatriya, or vaishya, or shudra, or mix from the modes of nature. So that's not what our paradharma is. It's our conditioned swabhava, and there's a quality of the soul. The quality of the soul is our paradharma, is service, and that paradharma is awakened by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Our natural tendency to serve Krishna and become attached to Krishna and attached to serving Krishna. And when that happens, then there are certain things we just won't do because it doesn't have anything to do with service to Krishna. For that reason, pleasing to Krishna, not pleasing to Krishna. Pleasing to Krishna, yes. Not pleasing to Krishna, no. Very simple, because when we become attached to Krishna. In the Padma Purana, there's a nice verse that's quoted in Nectar of Devotion. The principles, there are six principles of surrender, or symptoms of surrender. It's a chapter in Nectar Devotion. Anukul yasya sankalpa, pratikul yasya varjanam. That's the first two. Those things that are favorable for devotional service, anukul yasya, I accept. Those things that are unfavorable to devotional service, I reject. I have to get on the mental platform. It's just like favorable to Krishna, not favorable to Krishna. Yes, no. Make life simple in this complex world. Because of that surrender to Krishna, or the paradharma being awakened by the process of hearing. Now, and with that comes knowledge and detachment, causelessly. So now, all that's just like preamble for the verse that I wanted to speak about. And the verse that I want to speak about is Dharmasya, it's Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text number 9 and 10. They go together. Dharmasya hi apavargasya narto tayopakalpate nartasya dharmaikantasya kamo labhaya hi smritaha. Where Vyasadeva's writing, same message as the earlier one, but just expanding on it. Dharmasya hi apavargasya. He means certainly. Dharma is certainly meant for apavarga. Apavarga. What does apavarga mean? What does pavarga mean? They're opposites. Huh? Pavarga. Pavarga. Well, material existence. The hard struggle for material existence. Survival of the fittest, Charles Darwin says. Pa pa ba pa ma. For you with no Sanskrit word. Pavarga.
Ba pa ba ba ma.
Yeah. Pa indicates parishrama, hard labor. And pa is thena, or foam in the mouth. You do hard labor and there's foam in the mouth.
Like the horses.
Like the horses. Pa. Pa. then ba. Banda, bondage. You're tied to the actions, the reactions of your hard labor by the laws of karma. You're caught in material existence. Bhaya, fear. When can I get out, and what's my future, and fear of the unknown, fear of death, fear. The verse that we recited this morning is Akuto Bhayam. Those that are on this path of devotional service, they're gifted with this doubtless and fearless condition of, because they know that they have protection and shelter. And ma, mrityu. That's where it's all over. Pa, pa, ba, pa, and ma. And then we do it again. Pa, pa, ba, ba, ma. Pa, pa, ba, ba, ma. Over and over again. That's pavarga. And up pavarga is without all of that program. It's not just moksha. Prabhupada translates it as ultimate liberation. That's like the fruit of paradharma. The fruit of paradharma is to go back to Godhead. Like being engaged in eternal service to Krishna. Dharmasya hi appavargasya narto tayopakalpate. That's like the negative. One should never engage in dharma for the purpose of material gain. The pavarga program, you delete it, and the apavarga program, you turn it on. The goal is to be engaged eternally in Krishna's loving service. That's the Bhagavatam's teaching. Now, supposing you're a nice, pious person, and you said yes to all of that, okay. That makes sense. But now what do? I'm doing my nice devotional service and prosperity comes. I didn't engage in devotional service so I could become prosperous. It just came. It came knocking on my door and said, here I am. Prosperity. Now what am I supposed to do? Must be that Krishna wants me to enjoy, right? I didn't ask for it. It just came to my door. Naratasya dharmai kantasya. If that comes of its own accord, because it will come. It's one of the, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, one of the anartas, the impurities of heart, is the final one, the last snare, is you do devotional service nicely and something comes. May not be prosperity, it may be the fruit of a little spiritual success. Some recognition by others, oh, you're doing very nicely. Or some title, some position, some honor. One of those kind of things. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that's one of the categories of anartas. One wants to be the enjoyer of that little spiritual success, because this tendency to be the enjoyer is so strong. Even in spiritual life, there's a tendency to be the enjoyer and do it successfully, and there's a little fruit of that success, and you want to be the enjoyer of that little fruit of that little success. Or some big success. Apparently, big success, where people claim that you're God. One of the gods is in the hospital. On a life support system. Or when Prabhupada spoke, you know, when one of the gods came in 1896 to Chicago, to the World Congress of Religions, and announced that we're all God, but he had to leave the convention because he had a toothache. So God had a toothache, and he had to go to the dentist God to take care of his toothache. Not that kind. Not that kind. So if something comes that's the fruit of a little success in paradharma, one should never... It's a checkmate again. You shouldn't pursue it, but rather only for ultimate liberation. And if prosperity does come or some success does come, never deploy it in sense gratification. But it should be used in service to Krishna. Only. Here's the translation, text 9. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. Furthermore, according to the sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupation should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. And the next verse says specifically how for one's personal use might that material gain be used? Because it comes, you know, it's for Krishna's service. Here's the verse. Kamasya nendriya pritir. Indriya? Meaning? Indriya, not Indra. Indriya. Senses. And priti. Love, affection. Indriya priti. I love my senses. Kamasya nendriya priti. It's negative. The desire for sense gratification should not be what rules. Life's desire should never be directed towards sense gratification. Then what should we desire? What's left? Labho. Labha means greed. Like strong desire. Labho jiveta yavata. One should desire only a healthy life or self-preservation, since human being is meant for inquiry about the absolute truth. Jivasya tattva jigyasa. This human form of life is meant for tattva jigyasa. Narto yascheha karmabihi. Again, it's negative. Nothing else should be the goal of one's works. It's not a life devoid of, it's not sterile or stoic or dry or like, not that. It's very joyful, joyfully performed. But to have that joyfulness and that illumination and that detachment from the things that may in the beginning look nice, like happiness and the mode of passion, it looks nice. But what happens after some time? It's like poison. Happiness and mode of passion in general. Happiness in the mode of goodness, in the beginning it looks very difficult. But in the end it's joyful. It looks difficult because it looks like it's depriving oneself of sense enjoyment. But when by diminishing the roar of demand for sense enjoyment and instead turning one's attention to something else, the higher pramdrishtva navartate, the higher taste, then there's not just relief, but there's a happiness that you can't experience unless you're in that quality of goodness. Happiness and the quality of goodness is from within. It's not something that's outside of you. And the Bhagavatam wants to help one come to that happiness. Motive goodness helps, so a devotee frames their life in that way. That's like, you know, swabhava, brahmakarma swabhavajam, compassion, tolerance, peacefulness, simplicity, cleanliness, self-control, cultivation of knowledge of the absolute truth, honesty, straightforwardness in dealings, religiosity, quality of goodness, brahmakarma swabhavajam. And then we chant and we hear. We engage. Those are the things that we do with the body and the mind. From the soul platform, we want to call out, vibrate spiritual sound vibrations and receive those spiritual sound vibrations. Awaken this paradharma of the soul. Again, so that our natural knowledge of the Supreme, of Krishna, and our attraction for Him awakens, and detachment from the other things. So this verse, these two verses are warnings. Even before we begin the process of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and the process of devotional service, be clear what the goal is. At least, you know, try to hear it. You may not be on that platform, but try to hear it. It's something to cultivate. That is, the purpose is this paradharma, awakening of our natural attraction for loving and serving Krishna. And when doing that, beware that the purpose is not to enrich ourselves in highest credit so that we can become material enjoyers. Even up to the stage of liberation. But ultimate liberation is simply serving Krishna. Whatever the condition, whatever our capacity to do that. And if prosperity does come, if material facility does come, then what? Don't employ it, or, like, you know, don't have two pockets. One pocket for Krishna, one pocket for me, one pocket for Krishna, one pocket for me. Just have one pocket, Krishna pocket. And even things that you do for your family or for your well-being or something, that do that in a careful way, purposely for service to Krishna. Career and home and stuff that we just like, the worldly things that have to be done. Let that be for Krishna also. Yad Kuroshi, Yad Asnasi, Yad Jahosi, the Dasi, Yad, like, you know, comprehensive list. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever austerities you may perform, whatever charity, do that consciously. Let this be for Krishna. And that right away, if it's not going to be satisfying to Krishna, don't do it. And if it's going to be satisfying for Krishna, I do it for Krishna. It's a life of devotion. And it has a lot of safety. It's a position of safety and protection. And therefore, like this verse this morning, Akutovayam. One is then gifted with a situation of being freed from fear. When we have our japa retreats, in the beginning we have a sankalpa, right? You have attended japa retreats. So what, at the beginning, what's your intention? You can do it less formally and say, would you like to share why you came to the japa retreat? Or another little more formal is, what's your expectation to achieve from this japa retreat? or even more formal is write down your sankalpa so that, you know, it's in your mind. It's in the front of your thought process. Here is what I would like. In my chanting of Krishna's holy name, I would like, then you state your sankalpa, your intention. It's part of karmakanda and it's part of bhakti. And karmakanda, it's I want my business venture to be successful, or I'd like this home that I'm newly moving into to be sanctified, or I'd like my son or daughter's marriage to be very nice, or, you know, you have your some sankalpa on the material side. And the spiritual side, there's also a sankalpa, some intention. So one of the devotees, when we're doing our little sankalpa ceremony and at the beginning in some sharing, they said, my sankalpa is to come to the stage of chanting Hare Krishna mantra where I can achieve a state of fearlessness. It's right from the Bhagavatam. We discussed that verse this morning. 219 Srimad Bhagavatam. Etan nirvidyamananam ichitam akuto bhayam. It's a state of fearlessness. And that the means of that is Harir Nam Anukirtanam, by chanting of the holy name, right in the Srimad Bhagavatam. That it's the most effective means to come to that, to enter that space, that sacred space where we're fully protected. When you're fully protected, what is there to fear? I'll end with this. I was visiting once in IIT Delhi. More than once, but one time I was visiting in the early morning. It's, you know, very quiet, peaceful. You know, a little bit fresh air. Delhi's not that bad. So, take a morning walk. And I learned a few things about life in India by that taking that morning walk. I learned about street dogs. Because in America we don't have this, there's house dogs, but if there's a stray dog, they have dog catchers and they catch the dogs and put them in a SPCA pound. But in India, they're all over the place. So that was one of my encounters. I was, you know, going for a japa walk. And, you know, another thing I learned is street dogs are very territorial. When you come in their territory, I don't know how it's defined, but they define it. This is our territory. And you're like, even it's a human, they check you out. You know, one raises his head and the other one looks at the other one, the other one raises his head, and they're checking you out like, don't come into our territory. Or they may bark. You know, if it depends, you know, they have different schools of thought amongst dogs. But if you're a dog and you pass through that territory, oh, you know, there's the pack and then there's another dog. You know what happens. I don't need to display what happens. So one morning I was doing this walk, and because I had become familiar with, you know, there's a gang, a dog pack. And at night, sometimes they roam around, but often at night they're in a group, they just hang out and sleep. So I was walking, and one professor was also walking, and he had a little cute French poodle, little white dog, little furry, you know, kind of bristling all the time, little white dog. And he had him on a leash. So I was walking this way, and the professor was walking that way, and the pack of dogs were over there. And one of the pack of dogs saw this little poodle coming along. You know, they keep the sustain the tone for quite a while. And that woke up the other dogs. And you know, and then they show their teeth. Look at this. I got all these sharp teeth. Look at that. And the hairs in the back of their head. You know, I can jump bigger than you. I'm so little. So the professor picked up the dog, put him under his arm, and had a stick. You know, he knew the program too. And he went walking right past those dogs and showed them the stick. And I watched the dogs. And the dogs looked at the stick. They looked at each other. They looked at the stick. They looked at each other. They shrugged their shoulders and went back and laid down. And the little poodle was wagging his little tail, licking the professor's face. And that morning's verse was about sanatta and anatta. Those that have a master and those that have no master. He didn't use specifically the example of dogs that have a master and dogs that don't, but in other cases he would speak like that. And besides, you know, what embodiment we have constitutionally, our Svadharma on the soul platform or Paradharma on the spiritual platform is we have eternally, constitutionally. Not like, you know, I have faith or I don't have faith, but it's the nature of the soul that we have an eternal relationship with Krishna. I mean, God in a generic sense and Krishna in a very personal sense. Doesn't matter what culture, what background, what language, what color, what anything. There's a person who's God, and he has a personality, and we have an eternal relationship with him. And to the degree that we become awakened to that, that's sanatha. And those that are in the anatha, that's a fearful position. One can be like, you know, really tough and do all that program, you know, as dog or as a dog-like human. But that's the fearful position, because who knows? In comes another bigger dog or a stronger pack of dogs, and you're a mess. You're a bloody mess. So, taking shelter, this is Sharanagati, taking shelter of that position, that's our real safety, a constitutional nature. That's what the Srimad Bhagavatam explicitly is inviting us to, through sound vibration, to come to that shelter, that position of shelter. And one last time, when we do that, by this process of hearing, our purpose, our intent, our sankalpa should be ultimate liberation. Not like, let me out of here, I can't take it anymore. Not that kind of liberation. But let me be engaged in my constitutional service eternally unto Krishna. Not for some material gain. And if some material gain comes, never deploy it in sense gratification, only in service to Krishna, sustaining this life in some practical way, and utilizing whatever we have in service to the Supreme, engaging ourselves in inquiry, Brahma Jigyasa, or Atma Tattva Jigyasa, inquiry into the eternal position of who we are, what our nature is, what we're meant to do, in a real position of happiness. We want that. Without exception, we want that. And stay
steadfast to that purpose and continue in the process of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and Krishna will take you there. He'll take you by the hand and take you there. He's offering, he's extending his hand. Please, take my hand. Let's go. So we just have to say yes. Follow that process of hearing carefully. The rest of Shima, these early verses in the first canto of Bhagavatam set the standard. They're like the root, and then from the root comes the little shoot, and from the little shoot comes leaves, and from the leaves comes, you know, the full tree, and the full tree comes flowers, and from the flowers comes more fruits. The fruit of love of God, just by that nurturing of the hearing process. Hare Krishna. Please read Srimad Bhagavatam regularly. Any comments? Questions? Yeah?
I asked you about attachments.
We spoke about attachment in the Bhagavatam class this morning.
So I have realized there's so many attachments we have in a gross level and in a subtle level. So I was just wondering if it is we should be letting go by force, or
no,
we should be start recognizing and accepting it and just do our dharma serving and by mercy.
Somewhere in between. The latter one more than the former one. But when or as much as attraction for Krishna awakens, if you put the horse before the cart, it will pull the cart. So first business is put the horse before the cart. And the horse is sadhana or bhajana kriya. You know that stage. So first comes faith, then sadhu sangha, then bhajana kriya. So put the horse before the cart. And when the horse starts to move, the cart will move. And the cart is anartha nivritti. So your question was about attachments. So let me recognize I have my attachments. Now what do I do about those attachments, which is your question? That's not like trash them. That's not going to endure because there's attachment. Let me put the horse first, and from doing bhajana kriya nicely, he's demanding your attention. From doing bhajana kriya nicely, just keep your attention there. What will happen is some of those attachments will fade. Some of them are very tenacious. They don't fade so easily. So then some of those that are not fading so easily, keeping the horse before the cart, that is, let me focus upon nicely here, the service of hearing and chanting, and then following that, my service mood becomes stronger. And in that service mood, let me attend to this garden of bhakti. Here's a creeper, very nice. Here's a weed. Let me uproot the weed. It's a mode of service, not a mode of like, I'm not good, and if there's this attachment or something like that, I'm a bad person because I have this attachment or all these attachments. Oh my God! Just part of service to Krishna, deliberately, but as a service to Krishna. Krishna, I can't do this without Krishna's empowering me. What to speak, even just like even recognizing that what's a creeper and what's a weed. But by Krishna's mercy, I can distinguish between the two, and I can distinguish I have some weeds. Now let me learn the process of gardening by Krishna's mercy and Krishna's empowerment. So that the cart stays before the horse. My preoccupation doesn't become my attachments. My preoccupation is my occupation. Constitutional activity, serving Krishna. And that's then a subset of serving Krishna is this other. The cart follows the horse. And as through passage of time, as that removing of weeds or letting go of attachments takes place, then, you know, what's left is a stronger creeper. But it's a natural process, not an abrupt or artificial or harsh or, you know, intimidating process. It requires diligence. And until, you know, that as I'm going along, then what you said is that's part of the cart. I'm accepting. I have these attachments. In due course of time, because I have faith in the process of Shravanam Kirtanam, I'm just going to continue with this process of Shravanam Kirtanam, accepting, acknowledging I have these attachments. And as my strength and capacity and clarity become sufficient, some of those attachments I'll be able to address consciously, deliberately, and gently, gradually relieve myself of them. But it's more by the light becoming stronger, thus removing the darkness, than it is by removing darkness. It's make the light stronger. Automatically, darkness will be dispelled. In natural sequence. Talk to Divyananda. You know Divyananda, right? I was having this discussion before it was on Friday when I arrived. I was just asking Rupa, how is everybody? So, you know, how is Divyananda and Chakri? And he, you know, described, and I said, how is Divyananda's health? He said, well, he has full medical coverage, but he just doesn't take care of his health. And I try to convince him to take care of his health. And you know what he says? Oh, it's just the body. Now, that's not, I'm not advocating that you just let your body deteriorate and, you know, and like that. But he's fearless because he understands, you know, it's going, let me use it. So our argument to him would be, well, you can use it longer and you can use it better. But a degree of fearlessness is when you actually recognize you're not this body. You may do something to maintain the body, but at the ultimate issue, if Krishna wants to take it away, what can you do? If Krishna wants to maintain it, so you do everything, the akotobhayam position is you're the servant, and Krishna is the master. And that's, you know, the soul is already given. Nothing can happen. The body, something can happen. So I take precaution. But ultimately, it's not fear. Because, like, let's go to the platform of Haridas Thakur, which is not where we are. But in that position of Haridas Thakur, he told the Qazi, you can do with me what you like. You're the king. The king is the representative of God. You're the king. So it's your right. It's your duty. You do with me what you like. He wasn't afraid. He spoke to the king very directly, knowing that Mary may very well provoke the king. But he didn't like not speak the truth because the king might be provoked. He spoke the truth, and he wasn't afraid. If the body is taken today or taken tomorrow, that's only possible if you're on the spiritual platform. Let's take Socrates and drinking hemlock. When he, you know, before the king, he said, you know, if you don't comply with the government, you'll have to be punished. And his reply was, first you'll have to catch me. Meaning the soul. So, once again, if you're on the platform of realization that you're spirit soul, you do things that are necessary to take care of the body and the mind. You act responsibly with Krishna's property. But if Krishna wants to engage it this way, that way, the other way, it's up to him. Then it's factual fearlessness. It's not pretense. And otherwise, it's not fearless. So, Prahlad Maharaj, fearless. Ambarish Maharaj, fearless. The Pandavas, fearless. Not foolish, but fearless. It's attainable. King Chitraketu, fearless. Fearless. This is Krishna's property. He's not going to misuse his property, and I, as his representative, nor am I going to misuse Krishna's property. If Krishna wants to use his property however he likes, it's his prerogative. Let me be conscientious and responsible. My department is service, and Krishna's department is controlling. I become fearful if I try to become the controller, because I'm not. Let me just be the servant. Conscientious servants, Krishna's property. And we make our plan, and things don't always go according to our plan. We have to have a plan, we have to have some service. Controlling is Krishna's department, and that's fine with me. Service is my department. That's fine with me. I like service. The greater difficulty is to not be negligent in our service. You know, become complacent in our service. Like, go along, everything's fine, and not pay attention. That's a problem. And then we become fearful when something shocking happens. Anything else? You have something. No? You have something else. Okay.
We just have Bayam talking. There are like different varieties of Bayams, like I was thinking about this also, like to maintain the family, you know, about the job and other duties, small things which we have naturally develop that fear? That is like a natural, or just get don't worry about it, or just
same answer. Same answer. Be conscientious. I mentioned two of the six angas of surrender. But another one is Goptritve. Goptritve. Krishna is my maintainer. If you think that you are maintaining your family through your work, that's Maya. You're the servant, and Krishna is the maintainer. That's reality. You do your service, and Krishna will do the maintaining. And a surrendered symptom of a surrendered soul is they're confident that Krishna will maintain me. It may not be according to this plan or that plan, but Krishna will maintain me. That's the abhaya of one who's surrendered. They know Krishna will maintain me. Just like a child. They feel safe with loving parents. Sanata and Anata. Maintain it to something that's necessary. And there may be different ways of that maintenance taking place legitimately. But in any case, it's Krishna that's maintaining, not my labor. I do service. That's my constitutional position. But it's not my labor that's maintaining me. Krishna is maintaining me. Okay, looks like we're finished. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Yeah.